Hello, everybody, and welcome to Beyond Awakening, the Future of Spiritual Practice. This is Terry Patton. I'm the creator and host of the series, and for anybody who doesn't already know me, I'm also the founder and teacher of Integral Spiritual Practice and the author of Integral Life Practice with Ken Wilber. I created this series to serve the evolution of consciousness and culture by creating a deep public dialogue about how higher consciousness can play a real role in helping human beings to rise to meet our current challenges so we can make as benign as possible a transition to a sustainable presence on our planet. I've now held almost 90 remarkable conversations on this topic with many of today's leading thought leaders and spiritual teachers. And once you've registered at beyondawakeningseries.com, they're all available for free download at beyondawakeningseries.com/blog. This morning, I'm joined by Annette Kaiser, and we're going to continue that discussion in a conversation entitled, Going into the Wild is a Universal Spirituality Unfolding. The way this works is I'll introduce Annette, and then she and I will dialogue for about an hour, and then I'll make some announcements, and we'll spend about a half an hour taking your questions. So we'll finish up in about 90 minutes. Annette Kaiser was born and raised in Switzerland, where she still lives most of the time. And after she completed her studies in economics and sociology, she married, had two children, and a successful career, eventually becoming a senior figure in the field of international development. Her special focus was women's rights and intercultural dialogue. Along the way, she began meditating, and her spiritual life deepened. And in 1982, she met her primary teacher, Irina Tweedy, the acclaimed Sufi teacher and author of Daughter of Fire and Chasm of Fire. She became Mrs. Tweedy's student, and after studying with her, she felt ready to move on from her career in international development in the late 1980s and opened up her own school of Tai Chi Do, through which she has trained Tai Chi teachers for over 20 years. In 1991, Mrs. Tweedy, Annette always refers to her as Mrs. Tweedy, which is, I think, how she asked to be referred to. She authorized Annette to give the first Sufi seminars, and in 1998, she authorized her to continue the Naqshbandiya Mujaddidiyya Sufi lineage, guiding people on the path of love. Annette studied with Mrs. Tweedy for a total of 17 years before her death, and at the end, Mrs. Tweedy authorized Annette to teach the truth as she knew it, in whatever terms she chose. So since 2000, Annette has been teaching integral spirituality, teaching and inspiring people in a non-dual, cosmocentric understanding. She sees the 21st century as a time in which there's a call for humanity to recognize itself as undividedly one, co-creating in collective wisdom, globally and locally, in the love of one heart. Something I deeply appreciate about Annette is that she's more dedicated to this universal service than to merely advancing herself as a teacher or expert. She's accomplished a great deal, having authored 12 books, owning and operating two retreat centers, Villa Unspunnen in Switzerland and Winschnur in Germany, inspiring the heart intelligence and influencing the lives of hundreds of students, also participating in many international teaching conferences, events, and initiatives. But she keeps reaching out, intending always to engender a higher cooperation among diverse and separate initiatives of different spiritual schools and teachers, working tirelessly, really, to help break through the glass ceiling that marginalizes the power of the human heart and spirit to shape human affairs. And this is what is behind her work to develop a universal spirituality. In that overarching impulse, she's a dear friend and ally and heart colleague, which is why I'm so happy to invite her onto Beyond Awakening and to introduce her to people here in America where she's not yet very well known. So welcome, Annette. I'm really happy to have you with me today on this program.
Thank you so much for this wonderful welcoming me to you and all what you said about our finally, it's not only me, it's many, many people, our heart wish. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, Annette, I thought it might be really helpful for us to begin by inviting you to say something about your understanding of the essence of the Sufi path that you learned from Mrs. Tweedy and how that has evolved or developed since you began teaching in a more universal way.
Yeah, big pleasure. Well, first of all, Mrs. Tweedy was a very, very, how can I say, surprising lady. When I first met her, I read first her book, The Chasm of Fire, and was so touched by the radicality of her path she described in it that I immediately wanted to go in contact with her. And so I met her, and I was just confused, just barely confused. I didn't understand a thing. And for 3 years, I really, because I was practicing Tibetan Buddhism, I was just watching her, inviting her to come to Switzerland, watching her. Who was she? And she invited me to come to her home also. And still, I even got more confused. When I arrived there, I thought, well, you know, I get now these wise answers. But no, she just cooked me some spinach and an egg and said, eat. And, you know, I waited and waited. And then she said, oh, you're tired. You're coming from South Africa. Just go to sleep. And, you know, so I was very confused because what she was didn't fit into my framework, mind work, conceptual work, mind. So after 3 years, I decided to really enter this path. And I was so afraid. I was such afraid of my inner dark side, and I knew I had to face the dark side being her student. So after 3 years, I went to her and I asked her, and she accepted. And it was like a bomb falling into my whole system. I wanted to be truthful in every level of my life, at work, with my family, with bookkeeping, with everything. And I started just to practice and listen what she is saying. And it's a very simple practice, actually. It's meditation and mantra, and then do some dream work. And, well, you know, staying midst in the life, it was a possibility to go a path of love which really, really took me into the depths of my shadows and also guided me to see the jewel that everybody has in her or himself, the pearl, like Sigi Jung would say. So this was a very thorough process, beside having children, being responsible for household, being an expert for the third world, and still practicing. She always said it's a 24-hour practice. So I did that, and I did that, and it was not easy. And with the time, it was even like that. After years, I was such a shy person at one side and a very proud person at the other side. She really put me in a way to the threshold where I was not able yet to speak out in front of the group after 5-6 years. And finally, I had really to talk out of my soul how much, in a way, I suffered and was not able to talk and to be honest with my inner being, not covering a shed or anything, just being very naked. And that was really a turning point. And I took it very, very serious, everything. And one day, yes, there was this sign coming. And I wrote to her everything for years. And then she noticed also when I talked about dream and experience, and then she said, yes, you start to teach. And I had never thought about it like that. It was something beyond my being possible. And so I could start. And I felt like a fish in the water. It was just bliss. At the same time, a lot of learning. I still had 9 years with her to go and to ask. And the last 2 years, 3 years, I was every month with her for a few days. And I had the possibility to refine things. Also, how to talk, to train students, and how to understand deeper the teaching of love. And as you mentioned, 1998, she gave me the freedom to continue the path in whichever way I thought was the right way coming from my heart. So that is one thing. And the other thing is maybe that, you know, because I was an expert, I was trained in dialogue principles, I studied economics, and I always had very naturally, I understood a spiritual path is a way of life. It's not so much how good you do the meditation, that's also relevant, but really the important thing is how you live. And it starts always with first my person, and then my family, children, my partner, then the work I do. And also I saw that the training we had with Mrs. Tweedy, some parts were not trained the way I thought it would be very helpful to be a conscious human being. Through all the time, I also was, of course, you know, reading a lot. I was with Sri Aurobindo since many, many years, following his scriptures and the Mother and Auroville, Ramana Maharshi, Nisargadatta Maharaj. With the Zen teaching, I was very much also in contact. I had always an ease to each spiritual path to find a language, a translation, what they mean with the terminology that I could understand or bridge back to my own learning. And that was one thing. And the other thing, as I said, I got in contact with the integral movement, of course, also with Ken Wilber. And I learned from each of these, you know, scriptures or talks or teachings, and I absorbed it. I tried it to integrate beside going with my inner visions and impulses. I always understood that integration of spirituality means how you are in relation with your body, for example. Do you love the body? How do you nurture him, train him? How is your relationship with the psyche? Do you like your emotions, your psychic pattern? Can you work with it? Can you write the energy? How is your mind, the relation to your mind? Is he a good friend meanwhile? How is the shadow part of the human being, of my being? Do I understand him also as a friend, teaching me something I have not yet seen? How is my relation to nature, to Mother Earth? How do I live with her? Am I fine enough to hear her voice? How do I build up relation with other human beings? How do I live my spiritual realm? And that is beyond any name. So that was always the way I tried to have an understanding of spirituality. So I created a new way. It's called DOOR, an integral way. And do also, beside traditional teachings, I do also adapted teachings in a way, or share with other human beings this more integral way of understanding spirituality as a way of life. I think that's enough for the moment.
Yeah, that's great, and it really gives us a sense of you and where you've come from. And in a way, it sets the stage for us to talk a little bit about the topic we wanted to engage in, which is this sense that maybe we really are at a time now where what is being birthed in our world is a new spirituality that draws on all the traditions, but which is really universal in its character. And that's something that's really become a focus for you, and it's become a focus for your whole consideration and work. And these two interlocking ideas of universal spirituality and universal cooperation. And so maybe you could outline for us what you intuit about this universal spirituality. What is it? What characterizes it?
Yeah. So it's very interesting. I just got a friend of mine putting me a few books in front of my door. And one is called Occupy Spirituality. Another one is called The Coming Interspiritual Age. I mean, it seems really that a lot of people are going into the direction of universal spirituality as one possibility to name it. So what do I understand about it? First of all, I'm just writing a book about it, so I line out maybe a few main issues. One issue is that in this understanding, I respect first the roots of universal spirituality. That means very old texts like the Upanishads, the Tao Te King, the Ashtavakra Gita, or, from indigenous people, some poems or some drawings or something that I still find relevant in a universal context of today. So I take them in. For me, in universal spirituality, everything is first seen, integrated, and of course also with discernment. Then I have a second layer, that is the spiritual traditions, which like the Zen Buddhist, the tantric way there are some women that are like in a tantric way more saying poems, where they through their poems express their state of being, which is just very wonderful. Then there is Meister Eckhart, for example. Then for me also, Jesus is really an archetype, like Buddha, Mohammed, and so on. Then we have Teresa von Avila. We have many, many, Ibn Arabi, Rumi, of course, Rabia. We have many, many spiritual traditions which have scriptures or expressed in poems mirroring their understanding what the nameless is and what a human being is in that context. Then I have a next step where I take in the main spiritual path and inspiration in our contemporary time. And there I would say Sri Aurobindo is very important, and Mother Teilhard de Chardin. Then also, of course, Ken Wilber's philosophy. I also consider Eckhart Tolle as an important in a certain aspect. Also, Amma just embracing millions of people. So there are some people that in our contemporary time, which I found are profound inspiration for humanity in an universal context. And then I have also some, I would say, reflection on light and shadow of these spiritual systems, the older ones, because not every spiritual system is in the same way developed. So I take also that into a reflection. And then, what are the main characteristics of a universal spirituality? I would say it's nameless, it's inclusive, has discernment, has an understanding of holarchy, of the holarchic principle. It is dynamic, that means it's not one person defining what is universal spirituality. I think we will be many people forming together universal spirituality, understanding it's a dynamic process. It's evolutionary. There is a freedom in it. It's very important that the spiritual path or a spiritual, guidance, it's always, always that the human being becomes free and is in this freedom responsible for the whole. It is spontaneous, natural way of living. It's a way of life, as I said before, including the understanding of the unique gift for the well-being of all, and understanding the next step of humanity is the field of we. How do we cooperate? How do we work together now? How do is spirituality following into the next step in a V-circle? And there is also another characteristic. There is a simplicity in everything. These are just a few outlines. And then I have like the understanding of basics of an universal spirituality. And this is for me, for example, the cosmos, the universe, and the human being, and the dimensions that that all has in itself, which is just something to have all. Then transcending the three myths also. The three myths is mainly about the concept of separation, which we suffer from mostly in our world. Understanding the four levels of existence, because it's not only, you know, the form we see as, you know, form that has limits. We have deeper levels of existence, like the quantum field, and then it even goes deeper, the vacuum, and even it goes deeper to that which we don't know yet. Then it is about the understanding of knowing, not knowing, and direct knowing. And the understanding, the deep understanding of the presence, the egoless nature and indivisibility of everything that is in essence. Then there is the heart of universal spirituality, and of course that is awakening, and it is means presence from moment to moment. It means also to love without limitation. It means to be stable in the presence and to understand the heart of the heart, and nothingness, all this dynamic, and of course to have an evolutionary perspective, an integral perspective where we understand what is non-dual and what are the consciousness structures. And then I have a few interesting not two elements like light and shadow, being and becoming, or spirit and matter, or feminine and masculine, or stillness and movement, or heaven and earth, or spirituality and science, and so on. And for the last chapter, it is, I call it, maybe the title is not yet clear. It's about universal spirituality back to the future, I call it at the moment. With the back, I mean, we have also collective shadows. And if we are going into a V field of universal spirituality, including that coming out of individual transformation, we also have to deal probably with the collective shadows, do some healing work, forgiving work in a collective field. If we do that from the present, it will change the past. Then there is the future, and there is for me a field of all possibilities. I see, like Teilhard de Chardin has said, when the human being is discovering the second time the fire, he will really be able to move mountains. He has cities that are available for him out of the love without limitation, responsible for the whole. There are new possibilities rooted in the unlimited love. So I explore that a little bit. Then I talk about transmission and practice, because universal spirituality means maybe that we have not only one teacher, but there is maybe also a cooperation in the subtle levels of different teachers, where they too give a new way of transmission to us here on Earth learning. And then, of course, I talk about universal cooperation, because you cannot really live universal spirituality without going into cooperation locally, globally, on all levels. And of course, that's a big, big challenge for us at the moment. And I write also about the three godly faces of manifestations. Not the three faces of God, but the three faces, godly faces for manifestation. So that's a little bit an outline in a few minutes what I understand at the beginning of an emergence of universal spirituality.
So, in a way, I think that the story of our time is if I look at the teachings of Ken Wilber, there's a kind of universality to that vision as well. And there are universal principles expressed in the, for instance, in Eckhart Tolle as well. You know, there is a kind of universalizing theme in contemporary spirituality already. But I think you're pointing to something additional, something that's going beyond what's already naturally manifesting when you point to this? And how would you distinguish what your vision is from what's just already happening?
Well, first of all, I tell you, I don't know what is happening everywhere. You know, that is because a lot is now on the move, I feel. So, but you talked about Ken Wilber, you talked about Eckhart Tolle. I could also see Sri Aurobindo or Teilhard de Chardin or, you know. Well, it is, you hear now that my words are not precise and I don't really exactly know. But I could see, for example, because you see what I did now, reducing it to a smaller circle. We had many meetings. There was even an attempt of a global spirituality where we had seven people coming together representing different spiritual paths. And we tried to find a text together where we could all say yes, that is really, we can say yes to it. We are all included. So this is in a way like a next holon. And I think universal spirituality in a way is including all these precious jewels from old traditions, from contemporary traditions, taking them together and being maybe also represented by some people, and to go together, we sit in a circle, let go of our ropes, being naked and forming the next holon, higher holon. Maybe that helps a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, that is one of the things that I notice that you seem to keep doing is to initiate cooperation among different spiritual teachers and among different spiritual communities and among different paths. And I think there's a theme that a lot of people are noticing, that for spirituality to make a real difference on the planet in all the ways that we hope for, this there does need to be more and more a transcendence of the functional egoity of separate spiritual schools and separate spiritual teachers and paths. And there is a certain frustration that I even sometimes feel that even people who are offering very powerful and beautiful transmissions of wisdom can sometimes end up functioning to just draw people to themselves or to their own school and not to
the essence.
Something that somehow transcends every school and every individual teacher and every individual tradition and draws people to set them free into becoming this universal Sangha that can be the next Buddha. The idea of the next Buddha might be a Sangha. How can we become that? And there's a kind of unselfishness that the teachers and teachings need to be able to be capable of if we're to do this. And it seems important. And I notice you working more than almost, you're one of the real leaders in drawing people together in that spirit. And I'd love to hear you talk about how this comes to you and what you observe about the pattern among teachings and teachers today.
Yeah. Yes, of course it comes also out of my experience with other teachers and other paths and other centers and so on. What I noticed, but that's now maybe 10, 15 years ago, when I was invited, you know, to, for example, with Zen teachers or contemplation a Christian mystic path. So what I noticed from many from these centers or leaders, spiritual leaders, you know, finally there was always a small nuance that the own path is a little bit better. It's very subtle. But I hardly ever experienced from, say, really big leaders, spiritual leaders, that they were willing to sit in a circle. And sitting in a circle doesn't mean the green meme. It means holarchy. But there are, in a way, things that one spiritual system is really very, very good at, profound. Say, in the transcend principle. Maybe another system, spiritual path, is very, very good leading in the immanent principle of understanding. Maybe somebody is good in schooling will. Somebody is good in schooling bhakti or surrendering. And somebody is good in, you know, jhana yoga or whatever. So I think it needs, in a way, the letting go of your own system to be able to really listen. And this, I didn't experience that much in the past years. But this has also to do, I have an understanding, these spiritual leaders I'm talking of, they are older people now. And when I see their life, they had already to stand up and be a mystic and be a spiritual leader, was already forming in a way or helping to form an archetype at the time in the 80s, 70s. So they did their work, but they're maybe not able, and maybe it's not their task, to really sit in a circle. So that was one of the experiences. Another one was the observation that I found sometimes that spiritual systems keep their students within the system. They don't give them completely free. I don't know if you understand that. But it's a very delicate matter. But for me, spirituality or universal spirituality has really to do also with utter freedom. We are, in a sense, free. And it's not that we have to do this or that, or, you know, sitting every morning or doing this every day in order to be a conscious human being. For me, it is the most natural, how do I say, Zustand, it's the German word. The most natural is to be now, here, exactly like that, and that is absolutely free and not bound by anything. And then, of course, we have the other realms where we have limits in the 3D living setting. So that is maybe these two things I would like to say, and also a third one maybe, that some spiritual systems are really also very much in a context of a culture. And we are becoming more and more a global culture, which can respect the different cultures and also their beauty they have. But sometimes I feel it is not necessary so much anymore, some entourage, I would call, in spiritual systems, that we are mature, or most of the people are today mature, to go directly to the black point when you shoot the arrow.
So in some sense, it's as though this new time is asking us to be true, not just in the ways that we were being asked to be true 20 or 30 years ago, but in a new way, that where we transcend even the convenient forms that we might have been consoled by or been empowered by or been made to feel important by, that were part of the past. And we have to give ourselves over even more unselfishly to something true that is alive now and that is asking something new of us.
Yes.
Is that?
I think so. That doesn't mean that you don't, or that you are not able to practice a very traditional path. But it depends very much the way you are doing it. What is your inner eine Haltung, your inner way of being with it? Huh? That is, I think, the main point, that we not are getting accustomed and just sit back, that we are renewed and new again and new again. So that is one thing. And maybe a very, very important issue for me is also, you know, it's really about living. It is really about the love, the immanent principle too. It's the transcendent and the immanent principle. And many spiritual paths have inherently a little negation of this world. And I think universal spirituality understands that we have also to be spirit in action.
Yeah, definitely so. You know, this is provocative to me in certain ways because My sense is that there's a crisis going on in this planet, a crisis of transition that is remarkable. And it seems to me, and this is really the premise of this whole series, that we can't really deal with this crisis in the way that it's asking without responding in a way that is another level of the evolution of the human species. Like, humanity has been in its adolescence and it needs to grow into its adulthood. Or, you know, humanity has to give birth to its next possibility, and that requires the best of us. It requires our spirit and our heart, our intelligence in a way that we haven't been able to manifest before, and it requires us to transcend a certain level of selfish pettiness that has characterized human culture up until now. And so that sense that the outer work has to be expressed through a deeper level of inner work has always been apparent to my heart. And the more intense this crisis becomes, the more intensely obvious it is to me that our spirituality, even though the great spiritual realizers of the past, you know, figures like Jesus or Gautama or even Ramana Maharshi, you know, that these great realizers represent a profundity of realization that I think goes beyond my own. You know, I'm not equal to anything like that, so I have to stand humble before what has gone before. But still, yeah. I sense that the times ask of us an expression of our spirituality that is new, that does go beyond what we've been able to do with the examples of those great teachers and how we've been able to express our spirituality. Somehow our spirituality has to wake up to a new level of power and commitment and efficacy, and that therefore there's an evolution of spirituality that the crisis is demanding, and that I have to make my own work an expression of the dynamism of this evolution of Dharma.
Yes.
And that my doing that is partly something I need to do in the depths of the of what I do in my own heart and in my own consciousness, and in the depths of the work I do with my own students. But an important part of it reaches beyond myself or even my work with the people who for whom I'm the teacher. That it asks me to reach out to other teachers, that there needs to be I coined this term, a metta sangha, a sangha of sanghas, something emerging that transcends the way that we've been spiritual practitioners in the past. And now that's a big vision, you know, to transcend, you know, spirituality is the greatest wisdom human beings have ever been able to express, and to say that somehow it represents a limitation that we have to go beyond is, you know, a very grand vision, and it's a grand vision and it's almost grandiose, you know, for an individual to think that we can be a part of the creation of something so deep and profound. But somehow it does seem like the world situation is asking for it, demanding it of us. And so there's something inspiring, but there's something potentially, maybe it's just an idea, you know, or a grand inspiring idea that can draw us out of the reality of our experience if we're not careful. So I'm wondering how you account for the all of this, the urgency of our time, the potential for delusion, all of it at once, in your way of relating to this.
Yes. You see, as I have been working in the third world for many, many years, and I have tried so much to change in the outer world structures and things. And I have learned there that if the human being is not also changing consciousness into wholeness, it will not be lasting, all the changes. This lesson I learned. So, and still, also, I think it needs both. We need to act outside, but coming from a root inside that just loves all that is. And in that, there is a silence. There is an urgence without an urgence. There is action that is doing without doing. Because I learned that when the pressure, the outer pressure, gets too strong, because I'm very much in touch with the whole world. I mean, you really can feel the world in your heart, the whole universe. That is real. So if, you know, 3 milliards, or you say, I think, 3 billions, of our people are hungry or are living under the existence minimum, I can feel that. I can also feel the luck, the goodness, the new birth of new children, and you know, many things. But if I get under pressure, my creativity gets limited or is shrinking. So the best way to see all that is really, I think, to listen deeply into the heart, being very awake. And if there is an impulse coming, like something is happening, I make a very concrete, you know, we have in Moldavian, which is in the east, we have a country where children are left alone because the mothers are going to work and they burn themselves. There is a lot of misery going on. I was so shocked to read it. So I thought, I have to do something. So when an impulse comes, then I do something about this. But again, it has to happen out of this calmness and inner joy. It's maybe, it sounds strange, but there must be joy in it, or, you know, the feeling of ananda, of happiness, out of that to be creative and be part and take responsibility for the whole. I think that is a way we can, you know, work together and do more without doing. Then you said, of course, about the potential of going wrong, or the illusion, or what did you say?
Well, that when we see a grand possibility, we can pump ourselves up with a sense of importance that is delusional.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But, you know, I can, in a way, see, I have visions in my heart also of, you know, how humanity could maybe develop and how everything could go into its place. But then, you know, every day, just now here, how I am doing it, you know, and how do we progress step by step. And even I think, you know, it might not happen all in my lifetime, but it doesn't matter. From the now, or in the now, I just do what I have to do. I can still have the big vision. The big vision is for me more a leading thread where I have a direction, and that's all. I don't identify with it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's kind of beautiful. It reminds me of something that I've appreciated. It's one of the aspects of Sufi teaching that I especially love, and it's a phrase that you have used a lot in your own teaching, even, you know, continue to use now that you're teaching in a more integral and universal way: the heart of the heart.
Yes.
There is something about coming to, you know, there are different ways of talking about spiritual awakening, some of which emphasize awareness only, and some of which emphasize a kind of deepening of our own feeling consciousness, you know, our heart consciousness. And you're emphasizing that. And I'd love for you to speak about how we grow in our ability to listen and to attend and to live from that deepest place, this heart of the heart, and even what that heart of the heart is.
Yeah. So, first of all, I think awareness or being present or the power of now is really very, very important to have the transcendental clear, the nothingness. It's very, very important, because without that, you cannot really enter the dimension of the heart fully. So what is the heart of the heart? First of all, the heart of the heart, like Ramana Maharshi talks about it, it's like a dynamo. It's the light of the light. It's that what gives to the whole system, our body-mind organism, the fuel, or say the light. So it is that without two, which, for example, gives also the light to the mind. So the heart of the heart as a dynamo that puts the whole system into life, into living, gives also some of its light to the mind, which is a reflective aspect of light. It's reflected. It's not the primer light. It's also good to understand that. And then he talks about, and I love that. He says, you know, in this heart of the heart, there's an opening so fine, like a tip of a needle. And on that tip of the needle, the whole universe is dancing. So that is for me the dimension of the heart of the heart. And what I discover right now is that our physical heart, and that is, I think, a new aspect, has in itself really this dimension. Sometimes it's mentioned it's on the right side of the heart, but it's not the heart of the heart, something abstract, not physical. So I exercise with myself, explore the heart, the physical heart and its dimension. And it is just great to have, for example, every day, 5 minutes, just to be with the physical heart, discovering the dimensions, not only the physical ones, because there is also, they are mysterious, but on deeper levels, it's even on the quantum field and beyond that. And it comes to this dimension like this tip of a needle where the whole universe is contained. So, yeah, I think the heart of the heart has to do also with the feeling aspect, the being feeling aspect of consciousness. And without love, I mean, there is no flesh on the bone. It's so dry. And I think that in a way we have, through the heart energy, to be attracted in such a way that we just fall in love with the heart of the heart. That is nothing. Nothingness, and at the same time, all that is. And all that is seen is loved in a way that is unlimited, as one heart. So I see in the dimension of the physical heart also that the heart is in a way of each human being like a cell. And through resonance and consciousness, we will once understand how synergies can happen for all human being understanding one organism, humanity, as such. So the heart of the heart is something we just start in a way to explore, to understand more deeply, and how it is connected to pure awareness, consciousness, and how the heart of the heart and consciousness is inseparably one.
Well, thank you, Annette. I think it's time for our break, and first I want to make sure that everybody knows how to find out more about your work. Annette has written a dozen books in German, and one has been available in English, and now two more will be available in English translation. You can get them online at her website, which is ANNETTEKAISER, AnnetteKaiser.ch. And very soon, late next month, on the 26th and 27th of September, she's going to be coming to the U.S. and giving public talks and a day-long seminar in Berkeley, California, with Bay Area Integral. So for details, you can go to BayAreaIntegral.com and sign up for the mailing list, and you'll receive the event announcements. two of her books, The Path Has No Name and 99 Questions of a Spiritual Teacher, plus an English language CD, will be available at those events. Annette also organizes spiritual cultural travels, and the next one begins just in a few days. She's going to be leading a group to New Mexico. Other destinations in 2015 will be to France, to Chartres Cathedral. Well, actually, that's in October of this year. And then in India, she'll be going to India and also to Jerusalem next year in 2015. She also works and collaborates with other spiritual teachers and social leaders in Europe and worldwide. Recent examples include conscious evolutionary Barbara Marks Hubbard, longtime United Nations leader Monica Sharma, Christian Felber from the Movement for the Economy of Common Goods, and Dr. Tom Steininger, who will soon be a guest on this show. All the programs and details are available in German, which you can translate using Google Translate on Villa Unspunnen, CHVILLAUNSPUNNEN.CH, and also AnnetteKaiser.CH. Additionally, I want you to be aware of my own offerings. As my inner life has continued to deepen, I've been listening not only to the universal being, God, the divine source of love and goodness and sacredness and silence, the mystery beyond description. But I've also been learning to trust and listen at new depths to the voice of my own soul, my own personal, individual, unique divinity. I've long recognized that there can seem to be two kinds of mystical practice, one that opens up beyond the self into love and freedom, and the other that surrenders into the depths of the psyche, the natural world, and one's personal soul nature. But recently, as my own practice has taken a soulful turn, many new understandings about the relationship of these two dimensions of mystical life have been clarifying. It's not like they're so neatly sorted out. They're quite interpenetrated in the spiritual literature. So I've begun to teach and write about it, and I'm calling that integral soul work. And early this year, I decided to share this work with a small circle of students. If you're interested to learn more, you can go to integralsoulwork.com and sign up for a free download of an MP3 of the talk with which I introduced those groups. That's integralsoulwork.com. And if you're interested to learn more about my teachings at an in-person event, I taught a four-day workshop in Germany this past May that really something very beautiful and deep and miraculous occurred there. It's kind of a magical time in this work that I'm doing. So you're warmly encouraged to join me for one of my upcoming events. I'll be teaching starting in just a week at Esalen, August 17th through 22nd. And then next week, I have events in Oslo, Norway, September 11th and the 12th through the 14th, in Copenhagen, Denmark on September 16th and then the 19th through the 21st. And then I'm going to be coming to Switzerland and teaching at Annette's retreat center, Villa Unspunnen, on September 26th through 28th. So you can find out more details about these events and all my other work by going to terrypatten.com, TerryPatten.com. And if you click events, you'll find out more details and there'll be a link to the registration page. Now, if you have a question, you can just press star 2 if you've called in by phone, or you can type your question on your computer screen if you've been listening via your computer. So let's see if we have any questions right away. I have a few more questions of my own that I will ask until we get in some questions from the folks who are listening. You know, Annette, I'm curious about different ideas of what it is that we develop in ourselves. there are quite a few teachings right now. Someone else who I encountered in Europe, who's an integral spiritual teacher from German-speaking world, Thomas Hubel, teaches a lot about opening up subtle perception and intuition as an important part of developing spirituality. And yet there are a lot of traditions, particularly the non-dual traditions of India and of Tibet and also Zen, that essentially warn people against this, that say, no cities without moksha, that the interest in developing these subtle capacities is maybe a distraction from something more radical. And I'm curious how you relate to this whole matter of opening up the different dimensions of one's being and the most radical and also, you know, like the subtle and the causal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What would you have to say about that?
Yeah. Well, first, I don't know exactly what Thomas Hubel is teaching, so I cannot really, you know, answer that directly. I can talk about the cities. And traditionally, yes, Mrs. Tweedy told us always that they are not interesting. That means when you have the ability, or she has in her diary, Cosmo Fire, she has the example where she goes through the market and sees everything, you know, in colors, and it's all bright, and she sees, you know, the thoughts of everybody, and so. And she goes to Guruji, her teacher, and says that with enthusiasm, and he only says so-so, and takes it away from her. So she understands the lessons for her, and that's also what she taught us, cities know. But I think, you know, the teaching of that time is one thing, and I think, as I said, Teilhard de Chardin was talking about we having, I don't know the word in its Schwerkraft, its gravity. Yeah, that's the word, gravity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talks about when the human being discovers the second time the fire, he is able to overcome gravity and other forces. So these are cities. And I think when we have really the maturity to be rooted fully in presence, in the way that we care for the totality and feel and accept in free will the responsibility for the whole and optimize the whole and not maximize us or a partial ethnic group or so, I think the cities will be the future that we learn to integrate them in the service of the whole. That's my view.
Mm. So, you know, it seems to me that we are needing to learn a more, I don't know, maybe a softer or more flexible relationship to these things, that the traditions that have taught us that the cities are not interesting or that they're a distraction are rooted in a deep truth, because these kinds of things can seem so glorifying of us and they seem so exciting and inspiring that they tend to be a great temptation and a distraction and a source
I
of confusion.
That but, when we are still learning to be nobody, in a way, nothingness, on the way there, I think, yeah, it's very good to have somebody who really has an eye on all that, because one can get, you know, distracted, one can get narcissistic, you know, and there is really some help probably needed to have a good look at what is happening. But I think once we are really awakening from moment to moment where this becomes reality. I always talk about the golden cut, you know, when most of our being is rooted there, I think we will be allowed more and more to cooperate. For me, it's a cooperation with the forces of nature, with, you know, other things that go into the area of the cities. But it can only be used really if it is for the well-being of the totality.
Yeah, this has really been what I've been noticing as I go through this territory I was mentioning about soul work, integral soul work, is that a kind of deep surrender, a kind of turning inside out of the ego structure to where you really come to realize that your only happiness is in your loving service and submission to the greater divinity, and you really are only praying to be, you know, made use of, you know, praying to be able to be made, your existence can be somehow justified in a sense through your giving of yourself to truth and to God and to love of others. That disposition that is sometimes summarized, you know, thy will, not my will, you know,
yeah.
the God's will, not my will, and you really are open to that. But when that orientation is very real, even if it's not perfected in every moment, if it's still really the some deep, deep dimension, there's a soul choice of that orientation, then it does seem to me that the incarnation of people's full power and the giving of their full gifts comes from it is even necessary, you know, that the soul orientation plays an essential role, that in a way you have to come into the knowing of your unique purpose, your unique gift, your unique way of being of service. And there is a kind of gross, subtle, and causal, you know, coming alive in the psychophysics of the manifestation of the totality of one's own being in service as an expression of that greater being.
Yeah, I agree completely, you know. It's also interesting, Sri Aurobindo, he writes in some chapters of Divine Life about the power in the being, the power of being, or he talks about the power. And first, you know, I was always overlooking that, and I said, it's not interesting, but it is very interesting, I think, once we understand that we are that, and, you know, immanent and transcendent in everything that is also empty at the same time, to understand that we are, as a human being, really called to become, as you said in the beginning, adult human beings who start to co-create. So what does that mean, you know? And I think one thing is to observe if it is the right inner haltung, the right inner, the right inner way. If you want to have cities, or if you want to have, you know, the ability to see telepathic, or, you know, to have, I think it has to be beyond wanting the I, the small I. But I had sometimes impulses coming through intuition that I should really explore certain things. So when these impulses come, I know it is not through the eye, to the filter of the ego, that this makes want something. And when this flow is so pure and clear, I just go with it, like I go with anything else. And I just try out.
Yeah. I've noticed that someone wrote in, Stefania from Ontario, Canada, asked us to clarify the term siddhis. It's a term, S-I-D-D-H-I, and it's, I think, a Sanskrit term originally, and it tends to mean powers, or this would be like extrasensory perception or telepathy or the ability to levitate, or to, you know, there's some extreme cases people talk about people living extraordinarily long lives or materializing hundreds of miles away from where they are, all kinds of miracles. It's kind of the miracles of the yogis or siddhis. So that's the term we used. And then we got another question from Dexter Graphic in Eugene, who asks, I think, a really interesting question. With your background in economics and global development, I'm curious how you connect the emerging universal spirituality with development in these outer realms and activities. You know,
well,
maybe more specifically.
Yeah. First of all, I start with my life. For example, how I eat. This, you know, how when I go into the food store, what kind of food do I choose? Is it biological? Is it fair trade? You know, there already things start, because we know from the food chains worldwide nowadays already, if we have a good choice of food, things will drastically change. Say, only the matter of eating meat or not eating meat is a big, big issue in a world context. Then I, of course, I have a team. I look that we have on each level where we work in the team, but also, as I said, with the finances, how we treat our guests, how we cook for the people, with what food. I try to be as conscious as possible and joyful. And I like to celebrate life. So in my realm where I work, I do these things. Then, I'm invited to have a seminar or a talk in the public in November for people that are in charge of factories, or, you know, I don't know the name in English. Do you know, Terry?
You mean factory farming?
No. You know, people that are like top managers.
Oh, yeah, CEOs. So they call them C-level leaders, CEOs,
exactly.
CFOs, yes.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm invited for a meeting to them to talk about the power of love. Then I do whatever. For example, we had in the Parliament Place in Bern, we had an official meeting with about 1,000 people talking about one humanity, one world, one consciousness, where we had politicians, cultural people, financial people together and standing up for one world. Then I do talks with people that are CEO in the energy level in Switzerland. We have a first meeting where we try to find out how can we change the consciousness of the Swiss people concerning the energy question, to have, you know, energy used in a way that is worldwide in balance. Things like that. So I do wherever I feel a possibility, or in our village, this may be another one, we start with this Christian Felber, we start to have an influence in the village with new ideas about communing, to have an economy for the well-being of all. Little steps everywhere, you know, we try to, where we have an entrance or we have an initiative, where it is possible, we take an influence.
So that makes a lot of sense and feels very high integrity. It doesn't connect very directly, though, to the question about international development and your history of working in the third world. Do you see, how can you help draw the connections more clearly? Like,
well,
are there other activities that are more political or more international in nature, in addition to this?
Well, I have
right
another.
Choices?
Yeah, I have. Well, that's smaller, you know. We have, for example, an open hand organization where we support projects in Africa, in India. Since 30 years I do that, and I still continuously do that with all the meditations groups that are part of me. That is another thing. Then we have reunions with people. We had last July a Friends Retreat, a global Friends Retreat, where people from South Africa were here, from India, from Mexico, from Egypt, from all over the world a little bit, and also from Europe, where we talk about spirit in action. What could mean a global cooperative forum, for example, or how can we synergize the new projects, the new ideas coming up, not as a contrapoint, but much more as being an attractive point for change.
Mm. So if you're to translate what you're doing as advice to someone else, you would really be saying that recognizing your relationship to every aspect of life and acting in every domain where you have an engagement, whether it's the simple choices about what you eat or the way that you make your choices about other things that you purchase or the way you spend your time, the way you relate to the people around you, but then also certainly also direct charity and political activity, that action takes place at every scale and in every direction, and that there's a kind of integration of one's deeper heart and deeper care with one's behavior that we can always endlessly grow in more and more?
Yes, I think that's very nicely said. Thank you, Terry. That's really what I try to do.
Right, right. Well, that's so beautiful. Well, here we are. Really, at the end of our time, let me
first thank you, Terry. I would like now really to thank you for what you do serve, and also that you invite me and other people in the service of the whole, and also for your clarity and your heart that I can feel how you participate and how we together, in a way, co-create. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Annette. Well, a few reminders for all of you listening. If you value what you're receiving here, please support our work by letting others know about it. They can register for this series at beyondawakeningseries.com. And if you're interested in learning more about Annette, please visit annettekaiser.ch. If you can be in the Bay Area September 26th or 27th, go to bayareaintegral.com and get on the mailing list there to find out the details. You're also invited to go to terrypatton.com, sign up for my personal mailing list, and also find out about my upcoming teaching events in Esalen in Europe. And if you're specifically interested in learning more about integral soul work, you can download that free teleseminar at integralsoulwork.com. And then what's coming up soon on Beyond Awakening, I will be interviewing the remarkable American spiritual teacher Candace O'Denver. I think that will be on August 31st that we'll be broadcasting that. I'll be speaking with Ole Vadum Dahl of Denmark on September 21st. He's created a remarkable school and real movement in Denmark. And also the remarkable American Tibetan Buddhist teacher Reggie Ray on October 19th. So thank you so much for joining Annette and me today. And Annette, thank you so much for the graciousness and authenticity. And there's a kind of purity of heart and directness in your being that comes through everything you say. So it's been a real pleasure to spend this time with you and with everyone. Thank you, everybody. And
thank you.
Yeah, goodbye.
Bye-bye.